The fake news wars that we're experiencing right now are not going to end soon.
Terry Mattingly on his presentation at this summer's Issues Etc. Making the Case conference, making the case for news discernment.
We're actually seeing a war to define what is and what isn't news. This whole thing is about the purpose of journalism and whether the classic American model of the press, with its whole emphasis on balance and fairness, is going to survive the internet age. What we'll be talking about is where savvy readers can go to get their news. We're also going to ask, what happens to American public discourse if we all keep on clicking on news sources that only tell us what we want to hear?
You can meet and hear Terry Mattingly June 9th and 10th at the Issues Etc. Making the Case conference in Collinsville, Illinois. For more information, just look for the Making the Case logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org, or call 618-223-8385. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We think about secular progressivism and we think, well, that would be by definition secular, a religious, not something that could be classified as a religion in itself. But if you stop and look more closely, you might begin to wonder whether or not secular progressivism is in fact secular at all. We're going to be talking about that question and answering that question here on Issues Etc. on this Monday afternoon, March the 27th. Joining us to do so, Setu Iyer. He's a freelance writer, author of the book Testament, An Invitation to Lucid Romance, and a recent column for The Federalist titled Liberal Fascism is What Happens Once People Think God is Dead. Setu, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thank you very much, Todd.
What about the reaction to the recent presidential election made you realize that you were not a progressive?
Well, I would say that with my book and my own thoughts and reflections, I've always valued developing my own vision of the world, my own understanding of ideas. And prior to the election, I didn't really consider how that links up with the current political, ideological situation in this country right now. But with the election, I think it seemed to really flip a switch in a lot of people, just the way they began speaking about their ideas and what they think is the right way forward. And especially hearing leftists, progressives speak about this, I just saw how radically emotional and irrational the statements were becoming, and I could realize that that's essentially religious mode of thinking. And that provoked me into understanding that I'm in the other camp.
So let's talk about kind of the hallmarks of religion that you have noticed in secular progressivism, beginning with what would the god of this religion be?
Well, the god would be history with a capital H. Every time they say they're on the right side of history, it makes no sense to me because, in my view, history is not a conscious agent, and human experience strikes me as cyclical. You know, like we can still read ancient Greek plays and find value from them because I think the human condition and the human experience, it's pretty consistent over time, and there's no such thing as linear progress to me like there is in the sciences. But I think they've transposed history for God, and they consider history to be a conscious agent which is intentionally going in some direction, and they think they're on the vanguard of that.
What kind of dogmas or doctrines would be held by a religion that goes by the name of secular progressivism?
Well, the identity politics, for example, the way they speak about race, the way they speak about gender, their affirmation that there are more than two genders or gender is fluid, which makes no sense to me. I mean, I clearly see two sexes. There's male and female, XX and XY. Saying that by now is enough to get you called a bigot because they have their own ideas about how these things work. And to me, that's just a dogma, pure and simple.
Is there any kind of apocalyptic prophecy associated with secular progressivism?
Yeah, I would say their apocalyptic prophecy is climate change. And I don't even want to get into the science of climate change or the extent to which it's valid. I'm more concerned about how they talk about it, and how they use it as an excuse to justify their own agendas, because their view would seem to be, well, the world is ending, so we can do whatever we want, and we must do whatever it takes. And this mentality, this approach to the issue, strikes me as fundamentally unscientific.
You say that political correctness is kind of secular progressivism's version of a religious inquisition. What do you mean by that?
Well, I was in college about 10 years ago, so I didn't think of this the way I do now at the time. But what I mean now is that if you don't agree with certain positions that the progressives advocate, then it's almost like they have a show trial, you know? You have to apologize for your ideas. I mean, you hear, like, these days about, you know, all the riots, like, going on campuses because they can't handle engaging with someone who has ideas different from them, you know? They want to call the person a bad person and shut them down. They don't want to have a free inquiry about the nature of the ideas themselves.
Where does the newly elected president, Donald Trump, fit into kind of the religious schema of secular progressivism?
Well, he would be their antichrist figure, pretty much, in that, I mean, many of the things he's done thus far, I mean, especially, you know, like nominating Judge Gorsuch for the Supreme Court, I mean, I think that's an amazing move, but from the progressive angle, anything that Trump does is like a reason to freak out about things, because from their angle, he's bad by definition, so he can't possibly do anything good.
It leads, in many ways, to kind of an irrationality. I'm no great supporter of Donald Trump, but to say, okay, everything he does is by definition the wrongest thing anyone could ever do, doesn't seem to leave much room for thinking through any issue with respect to Trump.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you're not going to hear me defending his character, but I mean, I think from the progressive angle, any person espousing conservative views is a heretic, is a blasphemer. He's standing in the way of their God, which is history. And with this recent election, I think it was especially traumatic for them because they thought Hillary Clinton was going to continue carrying their flag forward. And then here's Trump now, and it's like they can't emotionally handle it.
Give us some examples, if you could, of kind of the emotional, irrational statements that you heard post-election that got you thinking in this direction.
Well, I mean, I went to the bar the next day, and I mean, I ran into multiple people who couldn't even speak. I mean, the women were in tears, and I mean, people were angry, upset, specific statements. There's no such thing as a good Trump voter, and they can't fathom, like, why anybody might have not been on board with the progressive agenda. And if you're against the agenda, it's almost like you're, by definition, evil. It doesn't matter what your rationales are. It doesn't matter where you're coming from. It doesn't matter what your motivations are.
Is there a root to this? That is, has this religion of secular progressivism essentially rushed in to fill the vacuum of a genuine view of God?
Yeah, I believe so. Because in my latest article for the Federalist, I suggest that, I mean, everybody worships, and it's not a question of whether you worship. It's a question of what you worship. So I don't think there is such a thing as a purely secular worldview, because I don't think that's the nature of the human mind or the human soul. And I think that when people lose sight of a deeper, more profound understanding of God or the holy or the human soul, what happens is they need to fill that vacuum with something else. And I think progressives have always attempted to fill that vacuum with politics. I mean, this goes all the way back to like Hegel and Marx and onward.
You also make reference to Dostoevsky's Grand Inquisitor. Tell us what that is and how that helps us understand what's going on in secular progressivism.
Well, the Grand Inquisitor is a chapter. It's like a parable that's a chapter in his novel, The Brothers Karamazov. And the main idea here is that the Inquisitor has basically set up almost like a fascist regime of a church in order to benefit all the people, according to his vision. And he's done this in the name of Jesus Christ, in the name of compassion and kindness. But the fact is, it's a very oppressive society. And then in the story, the Jesus figure, he comes back and all the common people love him, but the Inquisitor immediately has him arrested. And then there's a conversation between the Inquisitor and Christ where the Inquisitor essentially raves and raves and tries to justify why people are bad and people are wicked and they need to be controlled and etc. So the impression you get is that even though he's saying he's doing all this in the name of compassion, he doesn't actually care about actual people, you know. He just wants to exert his power over them because he doesn't, like, believe in people or trust people. Whereas Christ, I mean, it's his strategy of believing in the individual person, you know. It's not always pragmatically valid or workable, but it's the only thing that's actually going to matter.
You say that it's kind of a literary example of someone who loves ideas more than real people. Talk about that.
Well, what I mean is, I mean, progressives always talk about, like, brotherhood and humanity and compassion, but their whole ideology and mindset, it's completely intolerant of everybody who doesn't agree with them. And they would be, I mean, historically, I mean, I think progressives and fascists have always been willing to commit great violence and injustice against actual people because they believe it's all justified in the name of furthering their God, history, you know? I think there's a huge contradiction between the idea of humanity in general and actually loving specific individual persons who actually live. And I think the progressives have it backward on that. And I think the conservative view is kind of reversed in that, I mean, in general, I think conservatism is based on a kind of pessimism about human nature, a kind of cynicism about human nature. But when it comes to actual individual persons who are alive, I mean, you treat them with decency and courtesy, and you respect their dignity, you respect their liberty.
That's an interesting insight. I don't think I've ever heard it put that way, that conservatism may have a pessimistic view of mankind in general, but tends to be, on the individual basis, more compassionate, whereas secular progressivism tends to have a very optimistic view about mankind, but on the individual basis, a pessimistic one.
Yeah, exactly. It's very ironic.
Where does fascism fit into this? This is a term that we have, many people thought we'd never hear again after the 20th century, but we're hearing it again here in the United States.
Yes, and in my article, I refer to Jonah Goldberg's book, Liberal Fascism, which was very enlightening to me. I mean, the key idea is that when the left, they use fascism now, they just refer to anything they don't like. They use it as a blanket word to describe nothing in particular, just anything that they think is against their conception of their God history. But, I mean, the irony is that historically, I mean, fascism is a left-wing phenomenon. It's a form of socialism. It's a form that was pioneered by people like Woodrow Wilson in America and carried on by FDR. And, I mean, Hitler was left-wing. Mussolini was left-wing. By fascism, I'm referring to a general approach to how you change the world through the use of raw power, you know? Like, if people disagree with you, then from the fascist angle, the appropriate response is to shut them down somehow because they're in your way. And there's no respect for the liberty of that person to disagree with you or live how he chooses to live.
It seems as though there is a very fine line between, say, using the levers of power at a university for students to shut down those with whom they would disagree, and simply using power verging on violence. Their fascism has, in the end, always resorted to violence. What are your thoughts there, Setu?
When I say power, I do imply violence, and that power logically tends to violence because power in itself is not checked by any higher moral considerations. It's not checked by any sense of truth, you know? I mean, if you just want to achieve the objective and you don't care what the means are, then, I mean, violence would often be a quite objectively effective means to get what you want to get done. But that doesn't make it moral. It doesn't make it right. And you'll always violate the liberty and the dignity of real people.
With this part of secular progressivism's nature exposed, what would you say to someone who says, no, this is just a Trump phenomenon. This is going to last as long as Trump is president, and then the temporary insanity on the part of progressives will pass. What are your thoughts there?
Well, I would definitely say that it's more in terms of their basic psychology being exposed, because I think this is the actual nature of progressivism. And since this is a situation of very high stress for them, that nature is coming out in a very clear and vivid outlines. But I don't think it's a temporary passing phenomenon that has nothing to do with the logic of who they are.
Setu Iyer is a freelance writer. He's author of the book Testament, An Invitation to Lucid Romance, and a recent column for The Federalist titled Liberal Fascism is What Happens Once People Think God is Dead. You can read it at issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Setu, thank you very much.
Thank you, Todd.
Folks, you hear the term fake news a lot these days. How can Christians determine fake news from real news? Terry Mattingly of Get Religion will be making the case for news discernment at this summer's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 9th and 10th in Collinsville, Illinois. Making the Case allows you to meet and hear your favorite guests. Registration is $120 and includes three meals. You can find out more and register at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. The Summer 2017 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 9th and 10th in Collinsville, Illinois. Tomorrow on Issues Etc., Pastor Tom Baker will be teaching a Sunday school lesson on Peter denying Jesus.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Dr. John Warwick Montgomery dice, un mundo secular tiene necesidad profunda de cristianos pensativos y racionales. Este mes, lea más de Dr. Montgomery y otros expertos de las ciencias y la teología por suscribir a The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod's The Lutheran Witness. Visite acph.org/trylutheranwitness para una oferta especial, 6 revistas mensuales por $6.99. The Lutheran Witness, interpretando a un mundo contemporáneo desde una perspectiva luterana.